What I like about motorsport and that competitive field is that each person is super motivated and it's not a normal 9-to-5 job. We all have a vision, we all try to achieve the maximum, and I think it's the same in startups.
Motorsport is a laboratory. It's a laboratory which basically every 2 weeks we are testing a product, we continue to try to improve it. And when we talk about improvements, we're talking about marginal improvements, which many times in regular industry you tend to ignore.
There's a big trust that we have. We can normally speak to each other about everything and sometimes also disagree. And I think that's super important as founders working together.
I think one of the first things which my first boss taught me, which I really enjoyed, and I think today I listen to that, is do it right the first time. I think that's been a motto all throughout. And I think in motorsport also it gets very important, is you only have one opportunity, you have to do it right the first time around.
Ihr hört Deep Tech Unlocked. Ein Podcast mit Thomas Lange und Thorsten Lambertus. Von 1E9, eurer Community für Zukunftsoptimismus.
Ja, herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Deep Tech Unlocked. Thorsten, wir beide sprechen über ein Thema, das uns beiden gut gefällt. Wir sprechen heute über Sport. Und zwar Sport in der Verbindung mit Technologie und das in einem ganz speziellen Feld natürlich, wo sich das besonders aufdrängt, nämlich im Motorsport. Und ich habe mal auch aus der Sportwelt eine spannende Sache nochmal ausgekramt, die ich gefunden habe, nämlich die 10 Nike Principles. Von 1977, kleiner Fun Fact, 1977 ist auch das Geburtsjahr eines unserer Gäste heute, nämlich von Nick Heidfeld. Also die 10 Nike Principles Ende der 70er Jahre. Nike war in so einem Transformationsumfeld unterwegs, musste was tun, und der legendäre Rob Strasser als Marketingchef hat also so 10 Regeln nochmal aufgestellt, die jedem dann vor den Schreibtisch genagelt wurden, um festzumachen, wo wollen wir eigentlich hin als Unternehmen, was sind die Prinzipien, nach denen wir arbeiten. Und mit Blick auf die heutige Episode habe ich dir mal 3 dieser Principles mitgebracht. Ist übrigens ein bisschen chaotisches Dokument, also es sind Tippfehler drin, diese einzelnen Principles sind sehr unterschiedlich formuliert, aber es ist trotzdem sehr lohnenswert, jedes einzelne sich mal anzuschauen. Also, Principle Nummer 1. Our business is change. Das fand ich nochmal sehr interessant für einen Sportartikelhersteller. Our business is change. Trifft aber auch auf unsere beiden Gäste zu, weil auch die Veränderungen im Grunde im Kern ihres Geschäfts schon haben. Das zweite ist das Prinzip Nummer 5, was aus 4 Prinzipien wieder besteht. Also da sieht man ein bisschen die Inkonsistenz, aber sind alle 4 sehr interessant. Also, assume nothing, make sure people keep their promises, push yourself and push others. Stretch the possible. Das passt, glaube ich, auch sehr gut, insbesondere zu unseren beiden Gästen, die wir heute haben. Und Principle Nummer 6, live off the land. Also mach dir die Dinge zunutze, die du hast. Rufe nicht unbedingt immer nach noch mehr Budget. Ich brauche aber dies, ich brauche das, ich brauche jenes, bevor ich loslegen kann, sondern lege schon mal los mit dem, was du hast. Und mache dir aber auch alles zunutze, was du hast. Also das waren ganz interessante Dinge, die mir in Vorbereitung jetzt nochmal durch den Kopf gegangen sind. Passt, glaube ich, sehr, sehr gut zu deinem Gespräch, was du gleich führst.
Total. Und ich kenne auch, ich habe gleich geschmunzelt, das können unsere Hörerinnen und Hörer nicht sehen, aber als du die Nike Principles erwähnt hast, das ist, die sind mir sehr gut bekannt, und ich hatte für Ewigkeiten in meinem Browser ein Fenster offen, wo die Principles hinterlegt sind, und ich bin immer wieder drüber gestolpert, weil sie wirklich sehr gut sind, nur als Empfehlung. Und vielleicht noch auch aus meiner Perspektive Motorsport, wir können auch später darüber sprechen, wo auch der Anknüpfungspunkt zu Deep Tech ist, aber natürlich auch zu Business. Und ich kann nur auch hier vielleicht referenzieren, es gibt einen tollen Podcast, Acquired, und da gab es jetzt vor kurzem auch die Episode über die Formel 1, und nur einfach von der Größenordnung, das ist mittlerweile ein 15 bis 20 Milliarden Business, die Formel 1 macht in all ihren unterschiedlichen Revenue Streams, so um die über 3 Milliarden Revenue jedes Jahr. Und auch die Teams, die einzelnen, ja, die großen Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull, das sind Milliardenbewertungen und Milliardenumsätze, die da fließen, oder Gelder, die da fließen. Und von daher ist das nicht nur etwas, was natürlich irgendwo als Sport absolut ganz vorne weg ist, Motorsport als extreme auch immer Anwendung für neue Technologien, sondern eben auch ein sehr signifikantes Business sein kann. Und die Brücke wird ja hier auch so ein bisschen geschlagen.
Genau, und du hast mit zwei Leuten gesprochen, die sich auf den Weg gemacht haben, eine neue Rennsportserie rein elektrisch aufzubauen. Da werden wir natürlich einiges drüber erfahren. Du hast gesprochen mit Nick Heidfeld, einem der erfolgreichsten Formel-1-Fahrer seiner Generation. Und Dilbert Gill, der Teamchef, war in der Formel E, also das heißt dem elektrischen Pendant zur Formel 1. Und ich würde sagen, Thorsten, die beiden stehen schon auf der Startlinie. Wir schalten die Ampel auf grün und hören mal rein.
Deep Tech Unlocked. This episode is about motorsports, racing and technologies emerging from that sector. I'm very excited to welcome today Dilbert Gill and Nick Heidfeld. Thanks to both of you for joining me.
Thanks, Thorsten. Lovely to be here.
Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure. And Dilbert, I'm going to start with you. Before FG Series, and we're going to talk about it later on, you built teams, companies, even a Formula E organization from scratch. What was in your life like the first founder moment?
Well, Thorsten, I think that's a very interesting question. I don't remember when was my first founder's moment because I think entrepreneurs are born, never created. And I think I've always been an entrepreneur. So I think maybe if I now think back, it might have been in university when I was a college student. And when I wanted to make a bit more pocket money than what I had, I started repairing motorcycles in university and making some money out there. So I think that was my first entrepreneurial moment, and it was quite interesting. And I think that's where my love for motorsport also started, was helping my friends repair their motorcycles, make a little bit of money. And then from there onwards, I think it just started kicking up that, yes, creating businesses, putting things together has always been an interest to me. But at the same time, I've also liked to couple it with a corporate job also, because I think many times you go back to corporate world, it helps you to learn a lot around processes, work with like-minded people also there. So it's always been a mix of entrepreneurial life and corporate life for me.
So you said like this came quite natural to you and you were born as an entrepreneur. Were there any role models along the way where it felt like that's the kind of path I want to pursue as well?
Well, again, I think when you talk about role models at different stages of life, you have different role models also. So I think initially growing up in India, and we grew up in an age with, this was long before the internet. So information transfer was much slower at that point of time. It was newspapers and magazines and television, which basically gave you the media content at that point of time. So I think for me, it was largely my university professors, talking to teachers, et cetera, working with them. They were people who sort of, I think, were my role models initially in my life. Obviously, family, friends were role models because we did not know too much where I grew up in India about the rest of the world. Like whenever information reached us, it reached us very late. It was either a couple of days late, weeks late if it was coming through things. So for us, it was more, I think, local environment. And that was basically the rules for my sort of entrepreneurship, my thing. And I still remember, I think, one of the first things which my first boss taught me, which I really enjoyed, and I think till today I listen to that, is do it right the first time. I think that's been a motto all throughout. And I think that was a statement which till today is something which is really important. And I think in motorsport also it gets really important, is you only have one opportunity. You have to do it right the first time around.
Fantastic. Thank you, Dilbert. Nick, to you, are you also a born entrepreneur?
No, I don't think so. I think for me, it's more in the direction of sports. I always did like sport from a very young age on. Also in school, I was in athletics when I was younger, played basketball, did skateboarding, did a lot of different things, and then obviously went into motorsport and was able there to follow my passion.
Well, in total, you raced 183 F1 races. Some of them I definitely watched, also Formula E. And today you're building that racing series, FG Series. So being a Formula One driver, any lessons that this part of your life taught you that helps you today being an entrepreneur and building a business together with Dilbert?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think Formula One only, but my whole path through motorsport, starting in karting, Formula 3, Formula 3000, even smaller was Formula Ford. And I feel, especially in hindsight, that some of those teams, especially the smaller ones, are also a bit like a startup. You know, what I like about motorsport and that competitive field is that each person is super motivated and it's not a normal 9-to-5 job. We all have a vision. We all try to achieve the maximum. And I think it's the same in startups and especially in smaller teams. Later in my career, when I was at really big teams or worked with big manufacturers, I felt also very clearly that when you have 1,000, 2,000 or even more people working for one company, there are people then that can hide behind roles or other people and are not performing. And I've seen team bosses and other people trying to improve this person, change this person. And from my experience, more often than not, it doesn't work. Occasionally it has worked. But I think quite often you just ideally have to find the right position and job for that person. And something I read now more and more as I'm getting interested in founders and people who build companies, what I have seen, interesting to hear what you say there, Thorsten, is that most of those people believe that the mindset is so important. Somebody might be qualified, but if he is like, I don't know the English expression, actually don't even the German, but if somebody says the wrong tone and puts things in a negative spiral, he might be the most clever person in the world, but then it will not work. So yeah, I think that's what I learned from my time there and from the smaller teams. And in Formula One and motorsport in general, I might repeat myself here a little bit, but it's such a competitive field. I think Formula One in the whole world, and at least in motorsport, is a pinnacle with 20 drivers to just work with the same people. So I think you need to have the right mindset. You need to set yourself goals. There are always setbacks. You need to adjust yourself. You need to have the fire and passion. And again, for me, it's new, but this is what I see in startups and entrepreneurship, what is also so needed there. And I think is and was a very good school in general, not only motorsport or Formula One, but sports in general. If you're half successful or successful there, I think it's a good school, both for entrepreneurship, but also for life in general.
I absolutely can agree here. So that's really a pattern. All the things that you just mentioned that I also would see in successful founders and founding teams. That's something I also would like to talk about a little bit. It's not only about the individual being entrepreneurial, having an ambition, being competitive, and really pursuing a big vision, but you're also doing that together. And the two of you decided to do it together. So I'm wondering, and I'm always very curious, what is the story, the founder story behind the companies? How did the two of you get to know each other and ultimately came to the conclusion we should run a business together?
Well, let me start on that because I think Nick doesn't remember how this came together. Okay, this actually started in 2008. I was working for a large Indian tech organization at that point of time, and we were looking to sponsor actually the BMW Sauber team at that point of time. And I was invited for a race, the finale, actually, the very special finale in Sao Paulo, where when you remember Massa crossed the finish line first, but Lewis Hamilton won his first championship on the last, I think, four corners from the finish. It was an iconic event. And I was a guest at that event when Nick was driving along with Robert Kubica. So I spent some time with Nick that over the weekend, and he was really nice. I think we had a good conversation, etc. He obviously doesn't remember anything. He let me hold the steering and we had a conversation, and then life went on. Fast forward to 2013, we started Formula E. We had a dinner in Munich. We basically spoke a little bit about him potentially driving for the team which I was setting up. But at that point of time, I think Nick was more into Hollywood and glamour. So he wanted to work with Leonardo DiCaprio and Venturi. So anyway, I let him talk about that. I'm just joking out here. So one year he went and did that. And then in the second year, I think he realized it's time for him to come and work at Mahindra. So I think he joined. And I think we hit the ground running very well, because I think we made the sort of rules between us very clearly, say, hey, Nick, this is a team I want to grow. This is a team that's there for a long time. And I want someone to help me understand this. So not only as a driver, but I look at you as a person who's going to help sort of grow this team. So it's not only working with your teammate, but you're going to be mentoring teammates. I'll be getting like a younger sort of teammate for you coming in the future, etc. So Nick, I think, took that responsibility very seriously. And I still remember the first day he came to Spain for testing a car. It was a Saturday afternoon. We met maybe for 15 to 20 minutes. He drove in a camper van with his family, came there. And I had to fly to England that day. So I flew to England and I couldn't sort of stay for the first time he sat in the car and tested. And that evening, I get an email from Nick, and I still remember that. He says, please open this email on a big screen. Then it'll look small, because there were 38 bullet points in terms of improvement on that particular first day itself. And I said, man, we made the right choice of having someone on board. Immediately, we went for our first race to Beijing. After that, we got our first podium. Nick drove immensely. We were a bit of a weak team, starting team, but he sort of, with his experience, took us to a podium. And I think that lifted the team. So it was not only bringing a person who had experience, but also a person who sort of was able to lift the whole organization and start believing in ourselves a lot more than what we believed ourselves earlier. Okay, we were a startup, a scrappy Indian brand. No one had heard of us, etc. And I think that's something which is really important. And from there, I think trust built between both of us. I did not pretend to Nick that I know anything about motorsport. I think I had the spirit to build a team, put a team together. My total devotion was to success, and I didn't care where it came from, which individual, whatever brought it. And I think Nick understood that and brought that on board. And I think from there, that is now 2014, we started working together. So it's 12 years. So Nick drove for 3 years. And all these 3 years, I think we had a constant conversation in terms of how things can improve. One of my toughest conversations with him was actually when we said, okay, Nick, you're no longer going to be driving, but you're going to continue the team as a drive, as an advisor. And Nick took that so smoothly, and sort of he moved on to be an advisor. We did that role for a couple of years. And then we sat up after 3-4 years of working together, said, what next? And that's where FG Series came up and said, okay, we both have maybe a 10 to 12 year thing. Let's contribute towards to motorsport. The previous job, what we both, like where we were together running a Formula E team, was quite comfortable. We could have done it for a lot more years and continued doing it. But it said, okay, after 10 years of doing it, let's now step out to give back. And I think that's the mission where FG started for us, to give back to motorsport. Nick, what are your memories?
Well, what was very important to me when I did join Mahindra after my first season in Formula E, I remember Dilbak and I had a couple of conversations. And what eventually convinced me was Dilbak's analyzing of why season one for them did not go as well. It all made sense to me. And he also did set out the changes he wanted to make, the targets he had, how to get successful. That was the most important point for me. And it was fantastic to see, actually, as Dilbak said, that then in the following years that I was on board with some other fantastic drivers who did manage to get some victories. We were even close to winning the championship. But yeah, to see that was the idea, the analysis, the goals, and that we as a team really moved in that direction, that was fantastic. Something I would like to maybe spend a second on is what Dilbak said in regards of my first email I sent after the first day with 38 bullet points. It might come across as somebody trying hard and showing, here, I can change the world, I know better than you. But believe me, that was never my intention. My intention was and is always to improve things, at least things that I care for and I am interested in. Like in school, it was total opposite, because I had nothing that really interested me much apart from sport. And I believe many teachers and people in school would probably never have thought that I get that successful. But if you find the field that really interests you, then it's very different. And what I would also like to spend a second on this is that I have experience in various teams. And again, something I'm reading now more frequently is that you can be tried to put down. If you have so much passion, energy, targets, goals, and you want to change things, and then people around you try to put you down and say, come on, 38 points, that's not possible, let's focus on one. And a lot of successful people say, just keep pushing, then you're not with the right people. Get people on board who have the same mindset. It can be done. And as I said, motorsport is such a competitive world. It has to be done like that. For example, we had one team member in the team, which also was a little bit in that direction, saying, oh, Nick, you're pushing so hard and there's always something to complain. And he thought it was a bit extreme compared to a lot of other people in the team. And then he did change teams to a very successful team. And then he came to me afterwards and said, oh, in that team, most of the other people there also like you. You know, there's a lot of interesting things that I learned and have seen throughout my career.
So it seems like coming together to create FG Series together was like, as you said, Dilbak, natural born entrepreneur. So it was like also natural transition into that next step. And for you as well, Nick, because you're so into motorsports and you know it from the inside, how things work, and you saw these improvements, you found someone like Dilbak where you feel like there's a connection and you're working towards the same goals. And so ultimately it was not that big leap of faith here, but definitely also very natural transition into that role. This is how I understand what you said.
Yeah, it was sort of natural, but it was important. I believe that we knew each other for like 10 years already, and I built the best relationship I ever had with any team boss. There's a big trust that we have, and we can normally speak to each other about everything, and sometimes also disagree. And I think that's super important as founders working together that closely. But speaking a bit more about that phase and why I did join Dilbak in setting up FG Series, for me there were a lot of parts that made that came together. First of all, it was a time where I spent most time with my family. The kids are now 20, 18, and 15, and now I start to have more free time at hand because daddy is not always wanted or even not always needed, or the other way around. Sorry.
I know the situation,
Yeah. So for me, my priority actually for a couple of years were family, and now I have a bit more time at hand. On top of that, I also liked the idea of after my career, maybe building a company and doing something else in business and not only as a driver. And other than many other racing drivers, especially nowadays, during my career, I wanted to solely focus on racing. I never really set anything up next to racing as a company, a clothing brand or whatever. I thought, put my full focus on racing, and I don't regret that. Something I sometimes thought I could probably have done better is being and staying in contact with people. What is the English word for that? Networking was not really my strength. I was quite shy when I was younger. I think that has improved a little bit. But what I have found afterwards, which is quite nice for me to see, is that even without trying to do that actively, just by having spent so many years in the motorsport business, having been with so many teams, and as Dilbak said earlier, I think I'm not an asshole, you know. I'm a kind person, and people remember that if you treat them right. You can get something back later on, like we see now. I can approach everybody. I know a lot of people, and that actually is helping me now. And why I joined Dilbak is also that I very strongly believe in the idea and the project of FG Series. During the last couple of years, I had some other things offered to me in regards of investing to or becoming a part of a company or taking on a role. Some for me was just nonsense. Some was not interesting to me. And FG Series fit all those bullets where I thought it makes sense. I like to learn something new, but at the same time, I can bring a lot of knowledge. You know, it's great for me to start as an entrepreneur here with this startup series, but at the same time having a lot of knowledge I can distribute. So yeah, it's
fantastic. I think that concludes like the chapter of your founder story very well. Like,
I think I'm going to interrupt here and actually add a point. I think the main thing which comes out here is while Nick and I are very different, we came from very different backgrounds, etc. I don't know how our paths also intersected. Like in a normal life, it should not intersect our paths. But in the end, when we started this company, I think, and this is something which is for me, which has been a fundamental through the various companies I've started, is our value systems are the same. I think fundamentally we have the same value system. Okay, that's, I think, the bedrock of our trust of each other. We are family oriented. We want to give back to the sport. And we want to create something which is genuinely, which impacts in a positive way. It's just not for us to sort of scoot out here. And I think that's the bedrock of what we try to do is, okay, how do we put a team together which shares, I think, a value system? We can disagree on topics, but our fundamental values are the same.
And I think that is such an important lesson for any founder team out there. You need to be complementary in terms of your expertise and maybe also personality traits and stuff. But this shared ambition and this shared value system is so crucial because it's a long ride. You have started that ride and it's hopefully going on for many, many years and you become successful. So that is really great. And we touched upon the term and the brand name FG Series a couple of times. Let's make sure we talk about it, what it actually is. And before we do that, there's a tradition here in this podcast. There's always a tale from the future. So I will hit play and please let's listen together to what our AI created. And you tell me whether that resonates with you.
In 2033, Lila sits on the starting grid, somewhere on the edge of Nairobi. She used to watch races on an old phone. Driving herself? Never even crossed her mind. Not enough money. No connections, wrong place to be born. Then the FG series came along. Standardized electric cars. One platform shared across categories. Regional calendars instead of constant global travel. Lower costs, less equipment, less logistics. Lila applied. All she needed was time and pace. Now the lights go out. A system that didn't just open up, but became lighter, more efficient, more sustainable. And that's exactly why she fits into it now.
Is Lila a person that you are targeting with FG Series?
Well, that's amazing. I think it's really well synopsized, like why we have sort of created FG Series. It's going to go find the Lilas, find of them from around the world. And I think this is Nick, where he will talk a little bit more from his experience when I love his story and I don't want to take it out of his mouth, but largely when he says he has many times not raced against the best talent. And what we basically are looking out here is for that. So Nick, you actually take it on from here.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I wanted to speak about earlier also a little bit. But even you're saying that we go in detail, I don't want to talk for hours. But yeah, I went from karting when I was 8 years old and then went through all the junior formulas. And already back then, it was quite expensive and it's difficult to make your way up. So this is exactly what we try to do. We want to make the sport more accessible. We want to help people reach the top. Obviously, the drivers, but also mechanics, people working in PR and everywhere. And it's such, we've seen such a big, probably unexpected growth in motorsport, even in F1. It's a huge field. And as Tilbach said, I actually really wondered during my career, even in Formula One, if I was always driving against the best drivers in the world, because this is, as a sportsman, what you want to do. And for sure, this is not the case, because people cannot afford it. And in many regions of the world, there is no motorsport. And this very clearly is our target over the next couple of years. And I had experienced that a couple of times, just coming to mind now. When you're in the daily business, you're pushing, you're setting up the team, you're designing the car, and so on. Sometimes you forget a little bit what really started you and gave you that passion and a little ignition. And then occasionally we're speaking to drivers, especially young drivers, looking forward to FG Series arriving, speaking to them and seeing the sparkle in their eyes, how excited they are for that. That really fuels me massively again, you know, because this is actually what we set out to do it and what really inspires me, because I obviously partly see myself in them when I was young, with the desire and passion to succeed and drive and, yeah, come into motorsport.
Why does it need FG Series now? So tell us more about the mission and what it actually is, a racing series. I think many people don't really know what that entails to build one.
Well, I think this 1 hour will get over very quickly now if you go into this story. See, in the end of the day, if you look at motorsport. Motorsport is something where has grown tremendously in the last couple of years. A lot more people have started observing it from as fans, spectators, etc. But then when you look at it, it's the most expensive sport to get into. And that's something which we are trying to solve, is how do we make this a lot more accessible and affordable for talent? And when you look at talent, we don't stop at drivers, because people, like, they are the heroes, they are the gladiators behind motorsport are the drivers, the guys who are in the car or the girls who are the car, like, sort of chasing and working on it. But it's the entire environment of people who want to be supporting it, as mechanics, engineers, the people who are bringing revenue into the team, etc. So we basically wanted to create a platform which makes motorsport a lot more accessible and affordable. And that's where a whole story went in terms of equipment cost, because equipment is the biggest, I would say, differentiator in sport, and it's also the biggest sort of barrier of entry into motorsport is equipment. You can play football, buy a football for maybe 30 euros, start kicking it around, become better. Tennis, maybe the 100 euro racket, then you go to the tennis court, you start playing. And there are different sports at different price points to come in. In motorsport, you just don't go there, buy a car and start racing. It needs, okay, you go to a go-karting track, you start working on it, and then, again, the pinnacle is so small and tight, and I think it's quite interesting to realize, okay, now let's take one of the world's most popular sport, football, and I'm just doing very basic math to sort of give an example. Let's take the five biggest leagues of Europe. There's the English Premier League, La Liga, there's the German League, the Italian League, etc. Each league, let's just say, has 20 teams in it, and each team has, let's say, 30 players. So there's 600 professional players in England. So 20 into 30, let's just rough math. So there's five of these leagues. So there are 3,000 professional football players. In Formula One, there's 22 drivers, which is less than the size of one professional football team. Okay, less than one Manchester United is basically players is around the world. So the pinnacle is so small and so tight for you to get out there. And it's something which people aspire around the world. And it's another sport where a lot of people watch it on television who are watching it again. And now I'm sitting from the other side, not like Nick, and saying that, okay, a lot of people feel that they can emulate the hero if they get a chance. Okay, that I can get in a car, I can be good, etc. When they look at football, they say, okay, maybe Cristiano Ronaldo's talent is way above what I can do. Or if you look at Roger Federer in tennis, there's way above what I can do. But in a motorsport, because you sometimes don't see the athlete, you see someone who's in a car, you don't see the face, etc. It basically becomes, it's Michael Schumacher or it is Nick Heidfeld or someone in a car, but you don't sort of see them while they're racing, their emotion, the stress, etc. You believe you can do it. And a lot of people sit outside and say, hey man, if I had the opportunity. So how do we give these people these opportunities to go out there and prove themselves? And I think that's all about FG Series, is to try and democratize it. I was very lucky myself. I came from a market which isn't very traditionally big in motorsport, India. And then to get an opportunity first with the MotoGP team, then setting up a Formula E team, going to world championship status, etc., gave me a lot of pleasure. But at the same time, it also gave me a lot of responsibility, saying that, okay, this experience, what you've gone through, you have to now give this opportunity to other people also. You were lucky to get this opportunity through various investors, partners, employers, etc. But now, and that's where FG Series came on, and saying, okay, now, how do I take the next 10 years of my life to give this opportunity, which I've gone through and have enjoyed the journey, to another bunch of people? So as a CEO, founder of FG, my responsibility is to basically create the next generation of leaders, champions, etc. And I think one of the underlying things we look at FG is we want to create champions for life. And this goes back to Nick's example, and I really believe in this, is that's something which is amazing about sports people, is their discipline. Sports people get up, okay, it's winter, summer, etc. When you're an athlete, you're getting up at 5 o'clock, you're going running, you're doing training, you're doing this. There's no Christmas, there's no New Year's, etc. We normal people tend to sort of give ourselves priority first. Okay, hey, today I'm not feeling good. Let me take it easy. Let me do this. An athlete does not do that. They're so single-minded focused. And I think that's something amazing when you do business also. They come with a focus of concentration. When they're doing something, an athlete is able to devote their entire talent to it. And I think this is something amazing not many people realize. While they may not have had the most of education, because many times athletes step out of university or college or your school also much earlier to follow their passion. So they've not gone the traditional education systems like ourselves. But they catch up later through the single-minded focus, discipline. And I think the biggest thing out here and what we're trying to say is, I will use the word discipline. Okay, I know we've gone all over the place in terms of why we created FG Series. It's basically trying to create champions for life, people who are focused, who want to sort of go make a difference. And that's why one of the pillars is called For Good. And we basically want to use the word good out here quite representatively around it. Nick?
Yeah, if I try to answer that question, I think it's important to know that both Dilbach and myself have spent many, many years in motorsport. So we have seen what is working and what is not, and what can be improved and what can't. And the great thing is that we start with a white sheet of paper and we try to improve it. It's not that it is not working. I mean, motorsport is growing. There are junior series growing. Formula One is growing. Everything is growing. But there is space for something additional because of the fact that things are growing. And we believe that we can do a lot of things differently and better than existing models. I like to say that if you look at the cars in motorsport, they are usually the most advanced, but the underlying business model and ideas behind it are pretty old and always the same. So in FT series, like you see in other sports, but in motorsport, it will be new. We have franchises that we sell. And also, as Tilbach pointed out before, we reduce the costs massively because we lease out the cars. So trying to make it quite simple in explaining it, we divide the costs of the car by four compared to other motorsport series, and we achieve that by owning the cars and then leasing them out.
And so it's a little bit, Nick, if I may try to use an analogy here, instead of buying like a typical car, this is more like, I'm sorry for that comparison, but like a car sharing, right? So it's like the four people don't need to buy it, but they can access it for the purpose of driving, and you are building it and you are owning it. So that is kind how you reduce the costs also for the races.
Exactly. We build and own it. We deliver it to the circuits. But they are run by the teams. So there will still be teams that make a small but important difference. But they all have the same starting point. They can change the ride height of the car, the wing angle, the tire pressures, and so on. But they cannot take it home to their garages or to their offices and develop something new, which makes it super expensive and might also make it unfair. A nice small side effect is that teams like it because they don't have the cars at home and build even more buildings, but the cars always stay with us. We make sure that it is not transported by air freight all the time, but always stays relatively local. So we try to include all those ideas that we try to stand for as FG series. But quickly coming back, how do we divide the costs? One very unique thing about FT series is that this one car is specifically built by us, so it can be raced on the same weekend by two drivers in two different categories. And nowadays it's easy, it's fully electric, switch off a button, you have more power or less power. So you have a quicker or slower car fitting to the age and stage talent of the driver. On top of that, it's quick to change the front wing, probably the tires, some other things that make it look different, but also perform differently. And by that, we already halve the costs. On top of that, we will spend, let's say, 5 months in the Middle East and then another 5 months in a year in Europe. So by, let's say, calendar year, we divide the costs by two again. So this is why it's a force of a cost. And obviously, teams like that, drivers like that, the market opens. And on top of that, also we have built the car that it does not to be reproduced or re-engineered every year. We have built the car that it will last for 6 seasons. So that's something else environmentally it makes sense, but also ecologically it makes sense. And again, this is why it's great to start with a white sheet of paper. We try to take the things that are running well, but try to improve where we can.
And there's a notion of last question in understanding what FG series actually is and what it means to set up such a business. It's like there's a notion of a minimum viable product in like the startup lingo. It's about like the first product you bring to the market. So part of FG series as a product is not only the car, I guess, it's also like finding teams and drivers, leasing that car, and then you need to find the tracks. What else does it entail? So what kind of product and components of it do you need to build to get a racing series actually going?
So Thorsten, Nick and I basically came from a team background. Nick drove for many racing teams. I built various racing teams, etc. So now it's a huge leap of faith when you go from a team to a championship. You're building a championship. So you're building the entire ecosystem out here. There are a lot of unknowns when you build an ecosystem. there's multiple different pieces you're building together out here. Okay, one is the product, and that's really important. Okay, we have to bring a product which is accepted by our base. Okay, one, our base is the teams who need a nice racing car, which is relevant. And I use the word relevant very carefully out here, because end of the day, you have to give something which is going to train talent, improve talent, and look at them at investing out here, because as drivers, etc., this is what you're going to be investing. So it has to be relevant to them. The second part, it has to be sort of interesting. It has to be acceptable to a fan base also. So we also have to make a product which is which fans, people sort of look to it and start saying, aspiring, say, okay, this is a series they would like to follow. This is a series they would like to get involved in. And with them, obviously, sponsors, partners, etc. come in. So it's an ecosystem. So fundamentally, the product, what you're building, is really important. And as we all know, sport has evolved a lot in the last 10-odd years, okay? And I think we are reaching a stage where sport and entertainment are reaching so close. It's such a fine line between sport and entertainment. I think at FG, our initial focus will be on sport, building a very good sporting product, and then slowly moving on to the entertainment side also. It's not that we're going to be doing both together, but it's largely sport. So for right now, it's technology what we're going to be developing. How is it going to be relevant for young talent? How is it going to help them improve in their part of their ladder? Because we also realize FG is not the termination point of talent. It's actually an initiation point. They're going to go and try and terminate themselves in terms of in Formula One, Formula E, or other championships which are at higher level than us. So our responsibility at this point of time is to train them to where they want to get to. And this is not only drivers, it's engineers, mechanics, etc. And for many of them, they will also like to get back into real world opportunities, okay, move on. And so, okay, let's get back to industry, work with innovation, etc. And then that's something which is really important out here. So while we talk about motorsport and we're focusing so much on motorsport, FG also has a responsibility towards innovation, trying to take what we learn in the laboratory of motorsport. Because motorsport is a laboratory. It's a laboratory which basically every 2 weeks, we are testing a product to try and make it continuously, trying to improve it. Okay, and when we talk about improvements, we're talking about marginal improvements, which many times in regular industry, you tend to ignore. Hey, I can make this 0.01% better, or I can make this 0.1 second better. And someone as a CEO will say, hey, why do I even bother about it? Here, I think we start accumulating marginal improvement. And I think that philosophy is really important also, is that as individuals, how do I, on a daily basis, to myself also look at, okay, can I get smaller improvements in my own life? Okay, they may or may not even be measurable, but these are improvements. But when you have multiple small improvements, they add up.
Thorsten, something I would quickly like to say, because we have spoken about this before, Thorsten, and probably I should have explained better to the people hearing about FG Series for the first time. With FG Series, we don't want to be the pinnacle of sport. We don't want to compete with Formula E or Formula One. It's more something to fill the gap that currently exists in green tech motorsport between karting and those elite motorsports. And we want to train the people best to then move on into Formula E or World Endurance Championship or Formula One. That's one thing I just realized. Yeah, I could have probably explained better. And the other thing is, when you're in motorsport, you know that, but it surprises many people that it's mainly in Formula One where, as a driver, you can earn quite a lot of money. But in all the championships below that, you pay huge loads of money. For example, in Formula 2, which obviously is the second league underneath Formula 1, per driver, you have to pay. So each driver pays the team around 2.5 million euro to be able to drive. In Formula 3, you can easily pay 1.5 million. And even Formula 4, which is quite a junior series, if you want to do it at a successful, decent level, you pay more than 1 million euro. So that shows you the cost that is involved. And then we tried to talk about a little bit earlier. To make your way up to Formula 1 is nowadays requires crazy money. And this is why we want to make it more affordable.
Yeah, that clearly explains your positioning and it makes perfect sense. I was not aware of these numbers to even get close to Formula One and race there. So, Dilbak, you mentioned like a lab and you talked about innovation and technologies and
smaller improvements adding up to bigger ones. And for a reason, this podcast is called Deep Tech Unlocked. So I would love to touch upon new technologies a little bit, and maybe starting with you, Nick, and looking at your Formula One career. As you both mentioned, that's the pinnacle of racing and motorsports. Do we remember a single technology that was developed that really changed and impacted significantly your racing experience?
Well, I think in the past there have been many technologies from within Formula One, even before my time, that entered cars, general technology, or even aircraft like a carbon chassis, for example, various braking systems, things on helmets, I think even seat belts, a lot of things also safety related, and more on the technical performance side, there are also many things in terms of materials on the engines, things that have been developed and then taken over into road cars. What I have seen and still see is that the development in motorsport is so much quicker than if you would try it in a normal big OEM where things always take long and can speed up development. I think also on the electric side, I'm sure Dilbak will and can speak a bit more about that. There have also been things that in the beginning, as usual, were super expensive, thought that they could not be included in road cars, but now on inverters and things that technologies that make it much more efficient, materials. Yes, but to be honest, I don't always follow that up. I always, or over the years, have often heard teams and especially OEMs talk about that. But there are obviously also a lot of things that are tried and do not make the final way into normal road cars.
And I would really wonder, and please also, Dilbak, your experience here and perspective on it, but how come that for Formula One teams, the innovation cycles are way shorter than for any like major automotive companies? So what do they do differently?
As a leader of a team, I've never been in Formula One, but like as a Formula E team, was things, our cycle times are much faster. So we basically do a cycle time, like in a thing, okay? And again, I think we are not as regulated as road products. So if you're going to a road car, you know, there's a lot more regulation out there in terms of safety, impact, etc. So since the regulation is lower in terms of, okay, while there's no compromise on safety, and as Nick said, I think one of the biggest contribution of motorsport has been towards safety. I think that's one of the biggest things. Look at, in terms of, I would say, like even disasters, for want of a better word, in motorsport, has come down to literally zero at this point of time to where it used to be maybe 20 to 30 years ago. And a lot of this is actually translated back into road cars also in terms of composites, helmets, etc. To motorcycling, etc. But coming back to what you're asking, Thorsten, out here is my experience being more in electric motorsport. I wasn't a believer of that adage saying software is a new hardware. And I think totally today I'm convinced about it. Because we bring in so many software updates, which makes the vehicle a lot more efficient. And we were able to do this on a continuous basis and continuously sort of keep improving. So I mean, you talk about inner technology and innovation. I want to say, like, not all technology is new. Technology is basically an improvement of a process. Okay, so there's a lot of stuff. Okay, it's like most of the times technology is renovation rather than innovation. It exists, we renovate it or we improve it to the next step. Okay, pure innovation is actually quite less. If I look at it, we can actually measure pure innovation, but most of the time it's renovation which is happening out here. So that same process which is being done, it's becoming more efficient, it's becoming better. And as we change small things to the process in terms of it, we also use the word innovation out here. So part of what we're going to be doing at FG, and in fact, I would say even like we are looking at around 20 to 25% of our business is going to be around innovation in terms of how do we see that what we're doing in racing has real world outcomes. And not all of it needs to be outcomes in the automotive world. Many of these outcomes could be in certain other industries. And I'm just going to give you a small case in point also. Let's go back 5 years ago, or like nearly 6 years ago now. It seems a long time ago, COVID happened or Corona happened 6 years ago. A lot of the motorsport teams or sport came to a closure at that period of time. we as Motorsport had a lot of engineers, we had a lot of folks. And I think many of us started doing a little bit of innovation in terms of seeing how can we even create ventilators and stuff like that. And I remember within our organization in Spain, they were able to go create a ventilator very, very quickly at that point of time and then start working with hospitals during Corona or COVID at that point of time. So some of these innovations are engineers who quickly think about out of the box, where else can this be used? This thing. So there's a lot in the medical devices, which has gone into over the last many, many years in terms of the same, because we're talking about high-tech material, et cetera, and medical devices, into healthcare. It's gone into sailing, boats, aerospace, et cetera. So this innovation basically transcends across borders. So it doesn't start and end with motorsport or the automotive industry. It moves on. And I don't think we all realize how much of this impacts us in real life. Also in terms of even in terms of sport medicine, etc. Some of the interesting technologies which come out of motorsport and the applications are very wide and vast in terms of what you're looking at.
Yeah, I just had another quick thought about that. And I remember when I was with a big OEM in Formula One, and I heard the same when other big OEMs came in. They're just big dinosaurs. Companies, they're not moving quickly, so they don't have the same mindset in the whole organization. And as I said earlier, in a startup, that even the big Formula One teams sometimes feel like they are, people are so motivated. It's not a 9-to-5 job, you know. You think about things constantly, 24/7, trying to be successful. And with this OEM, I remember there was a problem in our Formula One team, and it was more on the OEM side. So they built a task force. The task force, getting a couple of people on board, thinking about what to do, when to have a meeting, and then having a meeting. And then they figured, okay, let's do a task force for the task force. You know, and then things just take forever, horrible. And this is why some big OEMs, when they came into Formula One, like Toyota, having all the money in the world, it doesn't just work that way. And also people there, I think, are much more afraid to do mistakes. Whereas in motorsport, it's accepted. You have to try things. You make mistakes, but only then you progress. And one exact example I have when we tried something that is nowadays used in a similar way, at least in many old cars, is if you steer the cars either by braking down a particular corner of the car or speeding up a particular corner. When I was at McLaren Mercedes in the late 90s, and they had the idea of having a third pedal. So no clutch pedal, but a second brake pedal. And you could choose from inside the car if you would slow down with this pedal the rear left or rear right. So to make the car either turn more or stop it from oversteering. And this was back in the late 90s. It was then banned by the FIA, but this is something that was already developed back then in Formula One. Or we had a mass damper, which is also banned now, that is used in many other fields and motorsport as well. So, you know, people are also trying to find solutions at a very high pace speed.
Very clear. And well, you both alluded to there is like new developments in motorsports racing. There's broader applications afterwards. There's many examples you also mentioned. And so I'm really wondering, what are the key technologies that you need for FG Series to build your vision here? Also, I remember when we first met in person and had a conversation, it was also you pointing out it's not only about the car itself, there's many innovations around the car. So give us a better understanding what that actually means.
See, when you're building a championship, building a platform, I would like to, okay, maybe at a very high level, divide into two parts. Okay, when you talk about development, one is the car development and what I call off-car development, on-car and off-car. So as when you talk about technologies also, we are, as Nick also mentioned, right, we're starting from a clean sheet of paper. So even in terms of the experience of how people are going to be looking at our championship, how they're going to be viewing our championship, the technology we're going to be using for streaming, etc., has to be quite different, because today's youth are looking at consuming sport in a very different way than what we traditionally watched. Okay, for us, it was, okay, switch on the television on a Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock and we'll start watching the Formula One race, right? It is typically all consumed on television. Today, some of these kids, like in fact, just last week, I dropped my daughter off at her first job and set up her apartment, she says, "Dad, I don't need cable anymore. I do want television, but it's going to be all on the internet. I don't want the cable connection anymore. We don't need it, right? Because I consume my news, my content from various other sources." And for me, it was, wow, this is something I wouldn't even thought of. Okay, I'm paying a cable subscription on a monthly basis because I want to consume my news and other bits from here. So I think from our perspective is, okay, the whole slot is, how are we going to be presenting this product? And I keep using the word product to fans, to sponsors, and other stakeholders. And how can we innovate around it? And that's where we have the luxury of a white piece of paper to start working on it, etc. And some of the existing relical sport might take a little bit longer to sort of transform out here. So I'm not even talking about on-car stuff. I think on-car, there's going to be a lot of interest, etc. But at the same time, also, is like, how do we tell the story of racing? We are trying to bring in certain innovations by bringing digital screens on the car so fans can actually see what's happening. Because many times you go for a motorsport event, and especially if you're a bit more of a serious fan, you tend to have what we call a second screen experience. You're looking at a phone for timing sectors. You're looking at what's happening on it. Because see, motorsport is slightly different from football. You're not seeing the whole field of play at all the time. Football, when I'm watching a game, I can see, okay, the entire field of play from where I am, typically at the stadium. But in motorsport, you're watching it, okay, the live cars for maybe 20 to 30 seconds, and the rest of the time, the cars are away. And they're all spread out at different bits of their. Each team is doing different strategies. The drivers are doing different strategies. So typically, you try to have another tool to try and understand. You're listening to commentary or your thing. We want to try and demystify some of this by bringing it onto the car so that people know, okay, a little bit more what's happening out there, even for a casual fan or a fan who just wants to watch what's going on. I think so. These are small elements of innovation which we would like to bring in the whole experience. And again, as Nick also we spoke about, right, when we bring in new technology, motorsport allows you to fail because we can fail fast and do the next improvement in 2 weeks' time. When you go back to a regular thing, I cannot fail on a passenger car. Okay, I cannot try an innovative braking system and say, hey, if it doesn't work, I'll do this after producing 100,000 cars and do a recall, etc. There's lives which are involved in it, etc. So the processes are very, very different where, and a mindset also in terms of, okay, let's try this, let's make this change, and how do we move on from there?
Yeah, I think we will, as Zubak said, have some new things on the car technically, like the screens, but also in terms of how we structure the weekends. For example, there's something new to motorsport where each driver shall have two races per weekend. One will be closer to Formula E, so it's about energy consumption. But other than Formula E, we have more like a sprint race, so they can develop into any other racing they want to go afterwards. Also unique for FT Series is that we have either rear-wheel drive or four-wheel drive. That's something unique again, like Formula One currently only has rear-wheel drive. In WEC, some have four-wheel drive. Formula E is going more to four-wheel drive. So this is something that is groundbreaking, as we have in our 5Gs as well. Another thing is that we obviously try and as one of our most important targets want to keep it cost sensitive. So we will not spend ourselves millions and millions on inventing new things. Even though I said we already have quite a lot of new and different things compared to other motorsport. On the other side, we already now have set up and are working on some, I would say, new technologies that we are working on together with some of our partners. So they team up with us, they have some ideas, and then they invest in it. We help them develop it, we test it, and then they market it out to the world. And we have some ideas which will technically wise probably make us the first one in motorsport to have something on the car. So if we cannot develop and pay that for ourselves, yeah, we can do that together with some.
Nick, this is Nick. You're moving to the sensitive part. Okay, we cannot say more about it than what you've said right now. So there is certain surprises coming up in FG Series in year two and year three in terms of technologies, and I think it's going to really wow the fans.
And that's already very exciting, and we'll observe and look what that actually is. So I have two final questions. Maybe the first one to Dilbak. Now, looking at all the developments and technologies and innovations you bring into that racing world, where do you feel like, what is the first thing that at some point mass markets will benefit from?
That's a very good question, Thorsten. And I think from our particular series, and I'm going around it, would be some of the software developments we're bringing on our electric racing vehicle. Because the good thing about electric mobility is, as I keep saying, and software is a new hardware, these can be updated in a vehicle to make it more efficient. And during the life cycle of you owning a product, the product gets better, which is very difficult on a combustion car, okay, to improve efficiency of a combustion car. Once it's sold to you, it cannot be done to a large extent while on electric mobility. So I think that's one of the biggest real world application we're going to have, is that we can do continuous development of a road going product once we start working with it. And that's where Nick and I also have a certain amount of experience from our past organization, where it also had an electric car brand, and there was going to be continuous mobility improvements going on out there. And I think that's where the world is moving towards, is where you buy a phone, you have like now iPhone, you have 26.2, then the 26.3 is coming, 26.4, whatever the software updates. And we got so used to it right now, so we know, and the next generation knows it. So the same thing is going to happen to your car. You're going to have like software version 1, 2, 3, 4 coming over the air, constantly improving. So it's not only the efficiency vehicle, maybe even the way you're consuming it, the screens in your car, etc. And I think those are certain areas which we see direct impact coming from FG series back to the world.
Very clear. Excited for that as well. And then a final question to you, Nick, like for someone like my 15-year-old son who really loves cars and racing and motorsports. So how should this new generation engage with FG series? What is the entry point?
Well, I would say in the past, it was always starting with karting, if you want to make your way up to making a living out of your passion and enjoy motorsport. Our target obviously is that FG will play a huge role in that, but especially talking about the younger generation, we assume and foresee that in the future there might probably be successful races that do no or less karting and come from simulator racing. And I think also Max Verstappen is a strong supporter of that theory. And this would also democratize the sport massively, because karting is also very, very expensive. And having a computer at home is far less expensive. So this is something that could happen and be interesting in the future. And for you as a dad, it's also cheaper and less dangerous.
That is good to hear. Thank you so much to both of you for the insights, so that we get a better understanding of what's coming in FG series and beyond. This was really fun having that conversation. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Oscar. I realize 1 hour passed so quickly and I really enjoyed it. So thanks for having this organized and having us on board.
Perfect. Bye.
Ja, Thorsten, vielen Dank für dieses interessante Gespräch. Ich werde, glaube ich, gleich, wenn wir hier auseinandergehen, mich bei Nick Heidfeld bewerben und mal gucken, ob ich auf dem zweiten Bildungsweg noch eine Rennfahrkarriere machen kann. Da werde ich mich auf jeden Fall ausführlich informieren. Bevor ich das tue, vielleicht mal in der Rekapitulation sozusagen, was bleibt auch hängen aus so einem Gespräch, was ja hochinteressant ist, weil sie, also auch die beiden Gäste, die du hattest, so aus so ganz unterschiedlichen Bereichen kommen und die jetzt auf einer gemeinsamen, auch geschäftlichen Reise unterwegs sind. Und ich würde mal als ersten Teil gerne rausnehmen das Thema Mindset. Und ich habe mir vorgenommen, das Thema Mindset ab jetzt oder das Wort Mindset ab jetzt gar nicht mehr zu sagen. Gar nicht nur, um Anglizismen zu vermeiden, aber ich will mal von Geisteshaltung sprechen. Einfach, um mal auch wieder ein deutsches Wort hier mit einzuführen, was das aber ganz gut betreibt. Was mir super gefallen hat, ist einfach nochmal zu sagen, so ein kleines Rennteam, gerade so ein kleines Team und ein Startup, sind gar nicht so unterschiedlich, weil du hochkompetitive Leute hast, die wirklich was erreichen wollen, ganz große Ambitionen, unfassbar hart arbeitend, permanent aber auch mit Rückschlägen konfrontiert zu sein, die du wegstecken musst. Du musst trotzdem weitermachen, du willst auch weitermachen. Und es kann sich niemand verstecken. Alle müssen abliefern, immer. Und das ist einfach nochmal was mir sehr, sehr gut gefällt. So in der Analogie habe ich noch nie drüber nachgedacht, aber ist hat Nick Heidfeld einfach nochmal schön beschrieben. Ein zweiter Punkt vielleicht zum Thema Geisteshaltung, diese, auch hier mal der Versuch, ein deutsches Wort wieder zu benutzen, statt Dedication, Hingabe, also diese absolute Aufopferung für eine Frage, diese 38 Bullet Points nach der ersten Testfahrt, das ist genau diese Form von Akribie und diesen, wir übersehen nicht oder wir versuchen nichts zu übersehen, alles auszuleuchten, alles zu tun, was ich sehr interessant fand. Und natürlich damit verbunden vielleicht auch Disziplin. Das haben ja beide nochmal sehr stark beschrieben. Also sowohl Nick als auch Dilbert zu sagen, dieser absolute Fokus und eine Disziplin und insbesondere dann, wenn es einem schwerfällt, eben rauszugehen und die Dinge nochmal zu tun, es eben sich nicht bequem zu machen, sondern dran zu bleiben. Also auch das ist eine schöne Parallele eigentlich zwischen Sport, Unternehmertum und Innovation. Und ein vierter Aspekt vielleicht, wenn man beim Thema Geisteshaltung ist, ist Integrität. Die beiden haben es nicht so genannt, aber sie haben es doch sehr deutlich eigentlich ausgesprochen, also beziehungsweise nichts sehr deutlich sogar ausgesprochen, hat gesagt, ich bin kein Arschloch. Und auch das klingt eigentlich so banal, aber wir wissen alle, wie wichtig Integrität im Geschäftsleben nun mal einfach ist. Das Spiel ist ein Vertrauensspiel. Und insofern fand ich das bemerkenswert, dass er das so hervorgehoben hat. Und Dilbert hat das eigentlich noch mal eine Ebene weiter auch entwickelt. Und das hat mich sehr an das Gespräch mit Philipp Baske auch erinnert, weil Dilbert noch mal sagte, Nick und ich, wir sind zwei vollkommen unterschiedliche Typen. Aber wir haben das gleiche Wertesystem. Und auf der Basis können wir wunderbar arbeiten. Auch das klingt immer so banal, so nach dem Motto, ja, natürlich, was denn sonst? Aber wir haben es alle schon anders erlebt. Und man sieht es auch immer wieder anders. Und er sagt, das sind so ganz fundamentale, basale Dinge, die einfach stimmen müssen. Und insofern fand ich das hochinteressant, das hier rauszuhören, wo ich es auch gar nicht so unbedingt erwartet hätte.
Ich kann das nur doppelt und dreifach unterstreichen. Ich habe auch tatsächlich, ich oute mich hier, sorry, auch das war ein Anglizismus. Ich habe Dedication nochmal, die unterschiedlichsten Formen es zu übersetzen, herausgesucht. Hingabe ist auch das, was ich mir aufgeschrieben habe als Stichwort, weil man das bei beiden raushört. Nick nochmal auch aus seiner ganz eigenen Motivation. Und ich komme auch hier wieder zurück, dass einfach die Menschen machen den Unterschied und man kann ich habe das große Glück, mit einer Olympionikin auch zusammenzuarbeiten und man hört das bei Athletinnen und Athleten immer wieder raus, genau wie du sagst, ob es jetzt über die Zeit gestoppt wird oder irgendwie die Höhe oder die Weite, die du springst, was auch immer. Du hast einfach am Ende keine Ausrede, weil die Besten der Besten zeigen sich in diesen ganz konkreten Metriken und es ist auch ihre, und das hat ja Nick sehr klar beschrieben, ist auch Teil seiner Motivation, sich mit den Besten zu messen. Und es ist etwas, was ihm antreibt, dass er bisher das Gefühl hat, er hat sich nicht immer mit den Besten messen können. Und deswegen auf einmal der Antrieb kommt, eine Racing Series aufzustellen, die genau das auch erlaubt. Und da sieht man einfach, aus welchen auch inneren Treibern und welcher Motivation Menschen dann in Gründung reinkommen, ganz anders. Vielleicht eine kleine Anekdote. Ich erinnere mich das ist viele Jahre her, da saß ich auf einem Panel mit jemandem, der hat ein Startup gegründet. Da ging es nachher um die Vermittlung von Dienstleistern für Reinigungskräfte. Und ich habe mich auf dem Panel gefragt, was ihn mit seiner Vita eigentlich antreibt, genau dieses Business zu machen. Und es ist ein sehr gutes Business, also hat total auch in vielerlei Hinsicht funktioniert, aber ich habe ihm die Frage auf dem Panel gestellt und die einzige Antwort, die ich irgendwie gehört habe, war, ich habe analysiert, das kann irgendwie ein großes Business machen werden, da kann ich Geld machen, von daher mache ich das. Und ich glaube nicht, dass das der Antrieb ist, um gute und erfolgreiche Unternehmen zu kreieren. Und ob wir das jetzt, du hast Philipp Baske angesprochen oder Roman Sick, Lilian Schwich und all die vielen tollen Unternehmerinnen und Unternehmer, die wir schon hatten, auch hier wieder so, ganz klar, für Dilbert, das ist das Natürlichste der Welt, das nächste Problem zu lösen, sich mit Menschen zu umgeben, denen er voll vertraut, wo diese Integrität da ist und wo er weiß, mit all den Situationen, mit denen wir konfrontiert werden, ist es uns möglich, mit diesem Team das Beste rauszuholen. Und für Nick in dieser, so wie er es auch schön beschrieben hat, die 38 Liste waren nicht, ich will es dir sagen, wie es besser geht, weil ich es weiß, sondern in dem Antrieb, in dieser Akribie, wie du schön gesagt hast, es jeden Tag besser machen zu wollen und dann auch zu können. Und das macht die beiden so komplementär und ich finde das eine unglaublich spannende, nochmal faszinierende Perspektive auf die zwei als Gründerteam. Und ich glaube, wir werden in noch viel mehr dieses Muster auch erkennen, je mehr wir genau mit diesen Art von Persönlichkeiten sprechen.
Mir ist noch was aufgefallen, wo ich erst gestutzt habe, habe gesagt, das klingt jetzt erstmal total naheliegend, ist aber was ich auch schon anders gehört habe. Also wenn wir über, ich sag mal, jetzt über die Geschäftsmodelle von Startups und so weiter reden, ob das jetzt Technologie-Startups sind oder vorher vielleicht auch aus dem Dienstleistungsbereich, wo man oft so den Ansatz hat, naja, also Minimal Viable Product, schnell raus, ausprobieren, explorieren, das Ding immer so ein bisschen weiterdrehen und naja, auch hier, sorry wieder für den Anglizismus, fake it until you make it und so weiter, so diese ganzen Geschichten, die wobei die dann oft häufiger noch, also mit viel Legende dann verbunden sind, aber sei es mal drum. Hier ist mir ein etwas anderer Ansatz aufgefallen, der auch gar nicht dagegen spricht, aber der nur zeigt, je nachdem in welchem Geschäft du bist, funktioniert genau das gerade gar nicht. Und das ist mir an ein paar Punkten aufgefallen. Also Dilbert hat ganz am Anfang in eurem Gespräch einmal gesagt, und da ging es mehr um seine eigene Haltung. Da hat er gesagt, er hätte früh in seiner Karriere den Spruch mitgenommen, do it right the first time. Und an dem Satz bin ich dann doch nochmal eine Weile hängen geblieben und habe drüber nachgedacht und bin dann, weil ich sagte, ist das eigentlich etwas, was so eine Art stehendes Konzept oder irgendetwas ist, was man irgendwo anders wiederfindet? Und es ist tatsächlich so. Und ich bin fündig geworden in den 60er Jahren im Qualitätsmanagement. Da gab es ein Prinzip mit dem Titel Zero Defect. Weil man gesagt hat, alles, was du in der Fabrik im Grunde an Fehlern schon mal direkt vermeiden kannst und wo du nicht nacharbeiten musst, ist eigentlich schon mal eine sehr, sehr gute Sache. Das war eine Zeit lang in den 60ern dann auch en vogue. Also der Name dazu, Phil Crosby, das war ein Qualitätsmanager im Pershing-Raketenprogramm, der diese Philosophie aufgesetzt hat. Und es war eine Zeit lang in der Industrie en vogue und dann später wieder etwas weniger. Aber fand ich einen sehr interessanten Gegensatz nochmal zu diesem, so, naja, wir basteln erstmal irgendwas zusammen und dann probieren wir da einfach und dann machen wir dann eine nächste Iteration. Iterieren tun die Kollegen natürlich auch. Aber dass sie schon versuchen, mit dem ersten Schuss richtig, richtig gut unterwegs zu sein, dass der sitzt, fand ich sehr interessant. Und
wenn ich da kurz reingehen, ja. Ich bin total dankbar, dass du diesen Punkt aufbringst, weil ich glaube, das ist seit jeher das große Missverständnis. Es geht ja nicht darum, irgendwie mal anzufangen. Ja, es ist ja eh egal, das erste Produkt ist immer falsch, ne? Und es geht darum, es nach bestem Wissen und Gewissen zu tun, und da wir beide uns immer über Innovation unterhalten, per se machst du das so zum allerersten Mal. Das heißt, es werden natürlicherweise Fehler passieren und du musst iterieren, aber der Anspruch muss doch in jedem Iterationszyklus sein, auch beim allerersten Mal, dass du es bestmöglich gemacht hast. Und das bedeutet nicht, dass du es Ewigkeiten herauszögerst, um Dinge zu perfektionieren. Es bedeutet nicht, dass nicht auch Fehler entstehen können und du vielleicht auch mal eine falsche Richtung entwickelst. Aber der Anspruch jederzeit muss sein, jetzt zum Zeitpunkt heute ist das beste Produkt, von dem wir überzeugt sind, dass es das Richtige macht. Und ich glaube, nach diesem Modell sind die beiden auch unterwegs.
Ja, und wenn man das jetzt noch eine Facette weiter sieht, es ist ja häufig dann bei Innovationen die Rede, es muss radikal und disruptiv und was weiß ich nicht sein. Was, also das stimmt natürlich in vielen Bereichen. Ja? Aber auch hier zeigt sich wieder, die Welt ist nicht ganz so schwarz-weiß vielleicht, wie man das erwarten würde. Sondern es gibt auch dazwischen Dinge. Also Dilbert hatte, finde ich, sehr schön nochmal beschrieben, wie Motorsport so eine Art Laborwelt auch ist. Für Dinge, die dann auch sonst in der Industrie natürlich relevant sein können. Dass sie aber vor allen Dingen nach dem Prinzip auch der permanenten inkrementellen Verbesserung funktioniert. Das ist ja das, was eigentlich immer so ein bisschen auch verpönt ist, wo man sagt, naja gut, aber wenn einer permanent immer nur kleine inkrementelle Schritte macht, dann verpasst er eben den großen radikalen Sprung. Ja, das haben wir ja bei der Digitalisierung gesehen und da hat es auch eine gewisse Berechtigung. Aber hier zu sagen, unser Fortschritt entsteht gerade dadurch, dass wir permanente kleine tägliche Verbesserungen machen, die sich dann aber über Zeit so stark kumulieren, dass wir da was ganz Großartiges schaffen, was andere uns auch gar nicht so einfach nachmachen können oder wegnehmen können. Also das fand ich auch nochmal eine sehr, sehr, sehr interessante Philosophie und ist, finde ich, für mich persönlich einfach auch nochmal eine Warnung, sehr vorsichtig so mit diesen Begriffen radikal disruptiv umzugehen. Richtig in bestimmten Situationen, in anderen lenkt das aber eigentlich von dem ab, was wirklich gefragt ist oder auch in dem schönen Schlagwort, wie Dilbert das zusammengefasst hat, Renovation versus Innovation. Du brauchst beides. Beides und eben zum richtigen Zeitpunkt und ergibt sich aber vielfach eben aus einem Prozess. Das hat mir auch nochmal sehr gut gefallen.
Ja, und es kommt nochmal, Deep Tech bedeutet auch für mich, dass diese Art von Innovation sehr oft auch aus tiefer Expertise kommt. Und das ist ja auch das, was Nick nochmal klar aufgezeigt hat. Wir beide kannten die Welt von Motorsport so gut. Wir wussten auch genau, wo die Fehler sind, beziehungsweise gar nicht so die Fehler, sondern auf die FG-Series basiert ja irgendwie auf einer Lücke, die sie identifiziert haben, diese Demokratisierung der einfachere Zugang, dann natürlich auch Elektrifizierung, das ganze Erlebnis drumherum. Sie sprechen von digitalen Screens und wie du auch die Zuschauer an der Rennstrecke und auch darüber hinaus an den unterschiedlichen mobilen Geräten oder vielleicht auch im Fernsehen dann mitnimmst und wie sie teilhaben können. Und das war für mich auch nochmal wichtig. Das erinnert mich so ein bisschen an diesen alten Nespresso-Case. Wenn du die Leute fragst, wann ist eigentlich Nespresso gegründet worden, dann sagen die alle so um die 2000 herum. Die meisten kennen die, seit George Clooney auf den Werbeplakaten waren, ohne zu wissen, dass das ja in den 80er Jahren entstanden ist. Die gleiche Technologie, gleiche Produkte, Maschine, Kapsel irgendwie dann zusammen, alles damals schon sauber patentiert. Aber das Geschäftsmodell macht dann den Unterschied. Und die zwei hier entwickeln halt jede Technologie am Fahrzeug und außerhalb des Fahrzeugs, nicht um der Technologie willens, dass irgendwo das der letzte Stand der Technik weltweit ist, sondern mit einem sehr klaren Ziel, diese unterschiedlichen Bausteine, wo sie sagen, da kann man das Erlebnis verbessern, da kann man auch irgendwie den Zugang verbessern, da kann man Kosten reduzieren. Dieses Gesamtpaket, glaube ich, haben sie als Positionierung super schön herausgearbeitet und jedes Stück Technologie muss da reinpassen. Und was für mich einfach auch nochmal so aufzeigt, du brauchst nicht immer den aktuell letzten Stand der Technologie, sondern sie muss dem Zweck dienen und in dem Falle dann auch im richtigen Geschäftsmodell, im richtigen Ökosystem aufgehangen zu sein. Und das ist ja für mich auch nochmal, was für hier eine besondere Komplexität ist, weil es eben nicht nur das Produkt Auto ist, Rennauto, sondern eben ja viel mehr, wenn du eine ganze Rennserie aufbaust. Und diese Bausteine zusammenzubringen, diese akkumulierten kleinen Stellschrauben dann jeden Tag hinzu, und das haben wir vor kurzem auch bei Roman Sick besprochen, das Thema, wie Software auch wieder Hardware enabled. Dilbert hat das sehr klar ausgesprochen und sieht das hier als ein ganz wesentliches Element, um dann das Erlebnis auch auf eine andere Höhe zu bringen, aber natürlich auch den Innovationszyklus deutlich schneller zu machen. Und auch das finde ich wieder toll, wie sich hier die beiden Welten gegenseitig befruchten.
Oder um es nochmal in den Worten von Rob Strasser zu sagen, our business is change, wo wir dann wieder bei den Nike Principles wären. Also hier einerseits sozusagen eine ganze Sportart oder die Art und Weise, wie Motorsport betrieben wird, komplett nochmal zu verändern, sich neu auszudenken. Und gleichzeitig aber natürlich auch das eigene Geschäft, die permanente Weiterentwicklung ist. Und was natürlich bei Elektroautos, das haben wir gehört, natürlich auch sehr viel einfacher und sehr viel schneller einfach geht, als das bei anderen oder vielleicht in der Verbrennertechnologie möglich ist. Und vielleicht tatsächlich, um nochmal die Sekunde auch bei den Nike Principles nochmal hängen zu bleiben, push yourself, push others. Das, finde ich, hat einfach Nick nochmal so wunderbar beschrieben, wie er sagt, so mit welchem Antrieb kommst du so in so ein Team rein? Und wer kann diesen Push, der dann kommt, irgendwie auch gut auffangen und damit leben oder hat seinen eigenen? Und dann schaukelt sich das im ganz positiven Sinne hoch. Also ich glaube, das ist wirklich ein großartiger Zug. Und auch ja, das dritte Principle, live off the land. Ja, hier ist das ja sogar eingebaut, wiederum aber in das Innovationsmodell dann der Teams. Also zu sagen, du bastelst nicht selber dir das Auto zusammen, sondern du kriegst das Auto dahingestellt und sagen, und jetzt tu was damit. Du kannst da nichts mehr draufschrauben und du kannst da irgendwie nichts mehr groß entwickeln. Du kannst dann vielleicht die Stellwinkel irgendeines Spoilers dann möglicherweise noch verändern. Aber ansonsten, leb damit, tu was. Und das, diese Dinge, die kamen da nochmal, dass man das zu einem Designprinzip sogar dann machen kann. Das hat mir hier auch nochmal sehr gut gefallen. Gerade auch in der Kombination jetzt nochmal mit diesen Nike Principles.
Für mich auch nochmal ein wichtiger Aspekt und wofür natürlich auch Motorsport steht, dieser extreme Anwendungsfall, weil einfach die Besten der Besten da gegeneinander fahren. Es ist wirklich auch, es geht um Millisekunden nachher und auch bei der FG-Series ist es und wird es nicht anders sein. Das heißt, das ist natürlich ein Feld, in dem man neue Technologien viel besser testen kann. Sie haben natürlich auch darüber gesprochen, dass der regulatorische Rahmen vielleicht anderer ist als jetzt bei unseren Autos, die wir zwei so kaufen, fahren, leasen, whatsoever. Aber auch nochmal Formel 1 natürlich oder diese extremen Anwendungsszenarien als Treiber für Technologie, die nachher in die Breite kommt. Ich finde, Dilbert hatte da schon eine sehr gute Idee, wo das Ganze irgendwann mal hingehen kann, auch was sie bei FG-Series gerade entwickeln als Blueprint für etwas, was auch der breiteren Masse irgendwann vielleicht weltweit zur Verfügung stehen würde. Aber ich meine, wir kennen die ganzen Technologien am Auto, ob es jetzt irgendwo dynamische und aktive Federungen sind, ob es irgendwo nachher die zwei kleinen Klappen hinterm Lenkrad sind, über die du dann auch schalten kannst, der Turbocharging, was ja in der Formel 1 dazu geführt hat, dass du auf einmal deutlich viel schneller bist, bei uns große Effizienzgewinne hat. die ganze Formula E, die entsprechende auch Entwicklung in der Batterietechnologie und der E-Mobilität verstärkt hat. Aber auch nochmal weit darüber hinaus, mir war ja gar nicht bewusst, dass zum Beispiel London Heathrow, das Air Traffic Control System, was sie nutzen, um all diese Flugzeugbewegungen zu koordinieren, kommt vom McLaren F1 Racing Team ursprünglich, wo du da mal siehst, wo auch die Ableitungen sind. Public Transportation in Singapur hat auch einen Ursprung in Entwicklungen aus gerade der Motorsport-Telemetrie bis hin zu im Supermarkt die großen Kühlregale und wie dort die Luft sich bewegt und ideal bewegt, um diese Kühlung effizient herzustellen, hat auch ganz ganz starke Basis in Entwicklung der Aerodynamik im Bereich des Motorsports. Und das sollte man sich nochmal, ob es dann irgendwie Space ist, ob es dann vielleicht auch Verteidigungsanwendungen sind oder eben im Sport. Solche extremen Anwendungsfälle kreieren wahnsinnig viele nachher auch für die breite Masse spannende Innovationen.
Und ich glaube, mit dieser Erkenntnis, Thorsten, ist, glaube ich, auch jedem nochmal klar und sozusagen ich habe mich darüber auch sehr gefreut, warum du genau Nick und Dilbak eingeladen hast, heute unsere Gäste zu sein, einfach auch so diese neue Facette mal aufzuzeigen und diesen schönen Zusammenhang. Dafür herzlichen Dank, Thorsten. Wir flitzen schnell los, tun, was wir tun müssen und tun wollen und ich freue mich schon auf unsere nächste Folge. Mach's gut.
Danke dir. Ciao.
Das war Deep Tech Unlocked. Ein Podcast mit Thomas Lange und Thorsten Lambertus von 1E9. Wenn's euch gefallen hat, bewerten, kommentieren, teilen und weiterempfehlen. Und wenn ihr euch für Zukunftstechnologien und Innovationen interessiert, schaut vorbei auf www.1e9.community. Bis zum nächsten Mal.